Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Art of Living radio show with me, Victoria Mary Clark. Today I am recording in my car with the roof down because I'm interviewing a sound artist called Sven Anderson. Welcome, Sven.
Thank you very much, Victoria.
And I'm accompanied by my audio assistant, a kind of advisor person, who is also an artist working with sound called Deirdre Mulrooney.
Well, I'm delighted and intrigued to be here. Thanks for bringing me along.
And the reason we're in the car is because you, Sven, have made a sound sculpture which is about listening in the city.
Yes.
And it's actually in the city.
It's actually in the city.
And we've just come from there, Meeting House Square in Dublin. And people can come and listen to recorded works by visual and recorded...
And visual sound artists.
Mm-hmm. How does it work?
So this is a project called Continuous Drift, and you walk into the space, into Meeting House Square, and of course...
Which we've just done,
and we had a very exciting experience.
And the only thing we could hear really, first of all, was the sound of a guy with a generator
cleaning the umbrellas, which was actually remarkable in itself to watch.
Yeah.
But this is...
That was a loud noise.
We're going to get to the loud noises.
Yeah.
So ideally, or not ideally, but generally, you walk into Meeting House Square, and maybe you know the space, maybe you don't, but it's in Temple Bar, it's kind of a point of transition between different places. Often during the day, there's not much going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's beautiful umbrellas or rain screens that were designed by Sean Harrington a few years ago, and so that infrastructure was... He actually built 8 speakers into those. And one day we were talking after presentation.
He put speakers in his umbrellas.
Why
would somebody put speakers?
Because architects sometimes are genius people.
Yeah.
And he had an idea that this would be something that could be relevant later on.
Mm.
So we were chatting about that, and I was also working on a bigger project with Dublin City Council. So I had this idea that I wanted to create a situation where people, the public, would have control over the sound environment in a way that they don't usually have.
Mm-hmm.
So now what you can do is you can walk into Meeting House Square, you can take out your phone or your tablet or computer, whatever it is, and you can log on to the website continuousdrift.com.
Continuousdrift.com.
And that website is basically an interface. It allows you to look at lots of different compositions that I commissioned for this by different sound artists, musicians, visual artists. And all of these compositions, you can just press a button on your phone that says play, or it's a little play, you know, kind of triangle, and that work will start to play back over the speakers in the square for everybody to hear.
So we have just done that, and we've actually listened to 6 different tracks.
Pieces, yeah.
Some of them were musical sounds, and some of them were... There was a guy saying okay over and over again. And some of them were more like just noises.
Exactly.
What was the idea? Was the idea to have music, or what was the idea?
The idea, the kind of fundamental idea is, it's something that I guess it's been around for a long time. Maybe you've heard the term soundscape before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Soundscape is a term that people who are working with sound, particularly in relation to spaces, like urban spaces, rural spaces, whatever it is. We often say soundscape when we're trying to talk about, you know, all of the sounds that you hear together that form a sense of a place.
Mm.
Sort of like we talk about landscape all the time. We all know what a landscape architect is,
yes.
You know, but we don't really know what a soundscape is, or we're starting to learn that maybe.
And like when we're in a city, we're probably hearing a lot of sounds all the time without
without even being subliminal.
And we kind of filter it out.
Exactly. And that's what this was. So I put out a call to a lot of different artists, and they're really different people. Some of them are based in Ireland, some of them are international. So we have people, you know, from the States, we have people from India, Hong Kong, you know, all over the world, which is really exciting because I wanted to get different takes on this idea of like what makes like the atmosphere or the soundscape of a place. Like if we're trying to change the soundscape around us, what kinds of things can we put in there to suggest another place, another layer of a place, another experience of a place?
And what brief did you give them? Did you ask them to make it pleasant or...
Not at all.
Whatever they like.
Not at all. I gave them a description of what the place, of what Meeting House Square was like. I talked to them about what Temple Bar, like how Temple Bar functions in Dublin. And in this work, is as much as it's, you know...
It's a place for stag parties.
It's a place for stag parties and hen parties. But it's also a place that, you know, it has an impulse of being a cultural quarter. And then it has a lot of things...
A long time ago, maybe.
But because it's become what it is now, it represents something in the city that's quite prominent. And it's supported by different people and it's antagonized by other people.
Mm.
But as a locus, you know, for making this kind of work that's really about listening to things around you, I think it's a perfect place for it, because usually, you, like you said, Victoria, you know, we walk around the city and we're not aware of the sounds around us, and we certainly don't have control over them. Maybe we have control over our own voice and, you know, of a conversation that we're participating in, but yeah, and maybe we have the control, which is in most people's kind of approach these days, it's headphones. To put on headphones.
Yeah.
And to make your own kind of mobile personal space, you know, to shut everything
else out. A lot of people are doing that now.
Yes, and when you do that, there's nothing wrong with doing that, of course, but at the same time, you're disconnecting yourself from the sounds around you. And what that
isolating
means...
Isolating yourself.
You're isolating yourself. And everything that you are shutting out becomes a form of noise. If we think of, like, what is noise? It's unwanted sound.
Yeah.
So no matter what it is out there, when you put your headphones on, to a certain extent, it's intruding on what you're trying to listen to. And
I didn't sneeze there.
And that sneeze just almost intruded if you hadn't caught it. But you did a fantastic job. But so when we think about a place like Temple Bar and we walk through it, we have all of these pubs, we have all of these kind of different venues who are playing music on speakers out, you know, that's bleeding out into the streets. We have, you know,
sirens.
We have a lot of hard architecture, surfaces where there's nothing absorbing sound. So the sound, instead of, you know, kind of diminishing a little bit, it's just kind of getting trapped in those spaces. You know, all of these things together, and maybe also the social attitudes around that area, result in a situation that's really quite extreme. And I'm not judging the situation at all as being anything, really. I'm just saying it is quite extreme.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to try to become aware of it. And that's what that's why this work is situated right there. Because you go in and you have a chance to change something. And I often say to people, you know, it's a very empowering thing to turn a sound on in a space and to see that everybody reacts to it or doesn't react
to it. Which we just did. And it was interesting to see that the guy with the generator actually seemed to kind of like the sound.
That's what happens, is that people who you
He was very nice, by the way, guy with the generator.
He looked like he was really enjoying it there for a minute.
Totally.
Yeah.
And this is it. You don't... As a public artwork, you know, this is a public artwork, it's for everybody. And that doesn't mean that everybody should notice it, but it means that it's open to everybody's criticism and their own interpretation and experience of it. But because you can go in there and do that now, you can turn something on. Well, you also, I should mention, you can also use the same website to turn the thing off. So if you walk through the space or if you work near the space, you can go on to continuousdrift.com and there's a stop button or there's a volume change button. So those moments where you turn a sound off are actually also quite intense, because the sound that you hear, maybe a composition, disappears and you're returned to listening to things as they were, but you're much more alert because something's changed. And in that moment of change, you become aware of all the other sounds and the way that they affect you and the way that you kind of are situated in your own sound space, your own listening space within them. And you walk out into the space of Temple Bar and maybe you have a little bit of a different kind of approach to thinking about sound, talking about sound, or remembering sound.
I have to ask the question, has anyone sort of started a battle with the sound, like, of turning it on, turning it off, you know, controlling it?
I will tell you that as I was finishing the piece, I brought in small groups of people, you know, kind of people that I knew, to, you know, to start showing it and to get some responses as I was finishing the way that it worked. And at one point I brought in a group of students from NCAD who are all interested in kind of digital media and things like this. And I went off to get a coffee, and I came back, you know, maybe 10 minutes later with my coffee after having left them in the space, and they were all standing directly in the center. They all had their phones out, and they were all tapping furiously at it. And I said, what are you doing? And they're like, we're trying to break it. And they're like, we haven't broken it yet, but we're trying to break it. And I was like, well, thank you for doing that. But it seems to be able to take this kind of thing. Now, the more that happens, the more, you know, if one person is starting something and the other person is starting something else, what happens is that you're... instead of just controlling the system, you become aware that there's somebody else in the space. In those moments, what the whole thing, in my mind, it kind of collapses and it forces you to have a real dialogue, you know, with the other person. You
so
have
you
to become aware.
You've got to say to them, excuse me, I'm trying to listen to this.
Yes. Yeah. Or you just one-up them and press play or stop again or whatever it is that you want. And these are, it's a very clunky form of democracy. But, you know, when I was kind of designing the whole experience of the project as, you know, kind of on a conceptual level, but also on a technical level, I thought this is actually the most interesting way of doing it, is to allow that kind of friction to emerge. You know, like, I guess if I think of it on a higher level, just as I think of it as a bit of a conceptual artwork, you know, it's about the experiences, but it's also about those higher level gestures of trying to create a situation where people have to reconcile with those difficulties and with the space and what's happening around them. Because again, these are, I don't know, you can tell I can talk about this for a while, but I think that even if we're not talking about sound, even if we're just talking about our sense of control and participation in the world around us, in the city around us, to enable situations where people are forced to, or able, I shouldn't say they're forced, but they're able to do these things.
Yes.
This is a different way of using a city. Mm-hmm. And that's what the project is also about.
So it's different to, like, I've come across sound sculptures before mm-hmm. where it's a continual sound. It's mm-hmm. just playing all the time.
Yes.
So the audience don't really get any input. They just come along, listen to it, exactly. walk away.
Yeah, and this is a very different
thing. It's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
How does somebody become a sound artist? As opposed, I know that when you were a kid, you played guitar.
I did play guitar when I was a kid.
You actually became kind of sensitive to sound as a result.
I did. I played a lot of very loud music when I was younger. I was a guitarist.
As you do.
But, I mean, it was a particular thing. And the friends that I played with, we never made a real band. I mean, we had our own thing going on. But it was kind of, we made what I would think of now as quite experimental music. But at the time, we just didn't know of other music like that. And we just did what we did mm-hmm. in a very kind of closed-in way. I was living in Boston. This is where
You're
I grew
from
up.
Boston.
I'm from Boston. Mm-hmm.
Who were your influences musically?
At that point, great Irish link here, it was all about My Bloody Valentine.
Oh, I love
all
Bloody
of us. This, I mean, this was
them.
This is where we
oh
came
my
from.
God,
my group
amazing.
Of friends and I—they are amazing.
Yeah.
And those albums, Loveless Isn't Anything, all of that stuff had hit us. This is early '90s.
Yes.
You know? And that kind of stuff really influenced us. So we were interested in
they're
kind of drowning
sound
things
artists
out.
As well as musicians.
They
aren't
are
they?
Absolutely.
I mean, you could stand there and listen to them play one.
Absolutely.
Thing for 20 minutes.
Absolutely.
Over and over again.
And you get lost in it.
You totally lost in it.
And you find very different things in it. And that's the kind of stuff we were doing, and we were experimenting with getting lost in that kind of sound. Mm. And it, interestingly enough, I was also straight edge at the time, which I don't know if mm-hmm. that's a thing
yes.
around here. But
well,
it's
not really a thing, but it's something where, I mean, for anyone who doesn't know what that means, that basically means you didn't drink, you didn't take
yeah,
drugs.
Yeah, but it's also kind of attached to a kind of cultural movement in the States, like mm-hmm. the hardcore music kind of mm-hmm. thing. So I grew up through that, you know, I was interested in that kind of music and that kind of scene. Mm-hmm. Not because I was really invested in the politics of it, but because I was interested in making that kind of music, and I wasn't doing drugs. A lot of
yeah.
people around me were, you know, so I was kind of in those two different scenes. But I was really conscious of what we were trying to do, I think. And so you asked me why I became a sound artist. It's pretty interesting, actually. I trickled around. I moved out to Albuquerque, New Mexico. I moved out to San Francisco. I was in San Francisco around 2001 when the dot-com thing was happening out there. Mm. All of the practice spaces where musicians would rent, you know, became unavailable because they were bought up
by
like little companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, to play with my drummer friend, he actually rented a storage space in south of the market, San Francisco area, you know, like where you would store your old couches and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And once a week, we would rent a generator and go down into the storage space, lock the door, plug in, and rock out for the entire night. This was not good for my ears, of course.
Mm, no.
But also, like, what was happening in these moments is we were finding it difficult to make this kind of music. It took a lot of effort. So I started working more and more in my bedroom on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
I became more interested in that kind of work. And by the time I moved here in 2001, I was kind of up and running making my own computer music, which was pretty abstract stuff. I was doing a lot of programming in order to create the kinds of things I was interested in. And I met a few other people very quickly here. I met a guy named Slavik Kui, who is an artist who's actually, he has a work in the Continuous Drift mm. project that we've been talking about. I met a curator named, or she was the director of Art House at the time, Sarah Pierce, who's an artist based here, also from the States. She also has a piece in Continuous Drift. And through the two of them, I just started meeting other people who are working more in the art field.
At what point does it cross over? Like, at what point would you say, well, this is a band and this is an artist? Like,
yeah.
My Bloody Valentine, really hard to...
Well, let's think about My Bloody Valentine. Maybe it's a good example. There's a lot going on in their music, and I don't know. I'm not very good with labels. I'm not very good with genres and all this kind of stuff. But at a certain point, for me, what happened is I was less interested in... sound and time, you know, like making things that would evolve over a certain amount of time, like a song would, or a composite, like a kind of, you know, traditional composition would. I was more interested in sound and space. I was interested in different speaker arrangements and situating
okay.
things in different places
right.
where the would
so
just
more like
this.
Phil Spector.
Yeah, yeah. But even
like,
more like to the point where
affecting this
where I wasn't convinced anymore that recording something was really interesting to me. I wanted to make, like this situation in Meeting House Square, I was interested in sound installation. I was interested in places where you invite people in, whether they're the public or somebody in a gallery, you know, and they're free to explore a sound space through their own movement, through their own kind of active or passive listening states. But you know, your work, it's a different, it becomes a different medium at that point.
So are you interested in the effect of sound on people emotionally, mentally,
absolutely,
psychologically?
Absolutely. I mean, and sometimes I'm more directly interested in that, you know, in terms of like different psychological states that come from things, especially things that we don't notice in terms of sound. But sometimes, like, you use the term sound sculpture, which is actually like a kind of a subset, you know, of different kinds of sound art. I mean, I am interested in this idea of like trying to create a space that has a certain volume, a certain kind of proportion that you can kind of discover through movement and listening, that to me becomes something that's a sound sculpture, especially when it's kind of integrated with a physical space in a kind of concise way.
Why don't we take a listen to some of what the stuff we recorded?
Sounds good to me.
And we will be back to talk a little bit more about being a sound artist and what Wonderful. That's actually like.
So there's lots of different works, and what happens is if somebody else comes in and decides to play one of them and something is already playing, whatever they do kind of paves over what's there. So I've just put on a different work, so that previous one will stop.
So all of the pieces are...
They're quite different, of course, and they're also quite different lengths. So the piece I was just playing there is about 15 minutes long.
So that was really interesting, hearing the sounds. So what made you choose those people, and how did they presumably they had to actually record their own sounds?
Everybody, so I approached a number of different artists some of them I knew, some of them I, you know, made work that I was interested in, and I was curious to see how they would respond to the situation. I should also say I fed everybody this kind of the artist. I gave them a text that's written by an architect named Constant Nieuwenhuis. He was a kind of crazy situationist Dutch architect. And he had a project that he worked on for years called New Babylon.
We're getting some
bus action.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
This is the real world.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is very John Cage.
No studios for us.
This is very John Cage.
John Cage is in the house, exactly. Yeah. But Constant was an architect who, he had this vision for New Babylon, which was like a crazy urban plan where people would stop living in the kinds of places they live in now, and they would all inhabit these kind of sectors. The sectors would have controls for changing the environment, including change for the sound environment. Mm-hmm. So my kind of, the reason the project is called Continuous Drift is a little bit of an allusion to that. But I gave part of an interview or a text that he wrote to the artists so that they would come in with this idea of trying, you know, allowing people to control the space around them to achieve different kind of effects and things like that. So the people who I invited were experimental musicians, sound artists, artists, visual, whatever, who work with sound a little bit, and everybody came up with a really different approach. And as they came in, I was kind of surprised. I was like, my God, this is really, I've opened the floodgates. But I was very happy to see the body of work grow into something that's quite diverse. So I do think there's something for everybody in there. And it's maybe something that's difficult to enter into because you don't know the artist necessarily when you go into the space, but you can browse the works by image, where every artist gave an image. And so you can just look at a very abstract representation of what's there. You can see an image of clouds or something like that, and you click on the clouds.
Oh, so they actually made the images
submitted
the sound as opposed to the other way around.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right.
The image is a signifier, to give you a clue of what the sound might be like.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so you have works that are 80 minutes long, you have works that are 2 minutes long, you have four channel works, you have all sorts of different things.
And is there one that you've made yourself?
No. I stayed out of the crowd. So tempting, but you know, self curating in these things. I mean, from where I'm standing, like my artwork here is this gesture of making that space. And I should say, because it's important, that this is part of a public
art
project.
And it was actually funded by Dublin City Council?
Yes, I've been working with Dublin City Council for 2 years on a big public art commission where I made a proposal that I work within the city council as the urban acoustic planner,
mm-hmm.
which is an idea that's it's been around since the 70s. It's not something that really exists. Maybe a few cities are starting to have somebody who mm-hmm. works in this capacity.
But which other cities in the world?
You mm-hmm. would see this happening a little bit in Stockholm.
Mm-hmm.
Here you see this in northern European countries and right. like a little bit in France.
So we're quite sophisticated here.
We're quite sophisticated. Mm-hmm. Although it's as an art project, it's as much about my kind of placing myself in there in a way that might not be comfortable. I'm not trying to antagonize anybody, but I am suggesting through the act of being this urban acoustic planner, I'm saying, why don't we have an urban acoustic planner?
Yeah,
we live in a city, and, you know, there's a lot of things that have changed in the city. I've lived here since 2001, and the city has changed a lot structurally, kind of socially, economically, ups, downs, whatever. We pay attention to all different forms of architecture, planning. Everybody has opinions about these things, but in the background, our sense of the atmosphere of the place, of the more subtle things that are a little bit harder to talk about from a planning perspective or an architectural perspective, they really don't get a lot of attention, and sound is a big component of this. I should ask you guys, like, what do you think when you walk around Dublin? What's your experience of sound in the city?
I think they should outlaw alarms. Car alarms
the
and
alarms are very wild.
Yeah. Outlaw them. Yeah. Because they don't actually do any good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see alarms going off or you hear them going off all the time.
Just
you never actually
people.
See any kind of response to it.
Yeah.
So get rid of them.
And the experience
Replace
of being quite close to an alarm, it's actually, and again, I have sensitive hearing or whatever, but I'm always amazed not to see more people covering their ears when a siren goes by. I always cover my ears a little bit. But, I mean, it's those kinds of things that... I remember years ago there's an American artist named Max Neuhaus who made some of the first larger sound installations that influenced what I did. He made them in the 70s and 80s, well, up until he died in 2008, I think. But he also tried to develop a system of sirens that was more, that wouldn't be as loud and that'd be more directional, so that you would actually be able to tell where something was coming from in a way that you can't. You know?
Yeah.
So we've had artists working on these kind of things over the years, but these ideas, they're very difficult for them to rise to the surface because if we think about the way a city evolves and who's interested in these kinds of things, it's very difficult to keep those things on the table.
And it's very subliminal,
yes.
the effect, you know, even to become aware. I mean, we are all affected by the audio, but
we're
not aware
exactly
how we're affected.
Maybe we're unconsciously editing stuff out.
Oh, yeah. If we can.
Yeah.
Tuning out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as a sound artist with, what did you call the ear condition you have?
I have something called hyperacusis.
Hyperacusis.
Mm.
So is that debilitating?
I'd like to say no because I don't want to be debilitated by it, but it is actually debilitating for people who have a bad case of it. Hyperacusis is when you have damaged your ears a little bit and you have a sensitivity to sounds because your ears can't regulate things that are coming in at certain volumes and frequencies. So everybody else in the room might be listening to some music and saying, it's fine, it's a fine volume levels, because their ears are working a little bit differently than yours. Yours aren't quite filtering it the same way as theirs, and so you're very sensitive.
So if you go into a pub or a shop where they're playing loud music...
It's not debilitating in the sense that I have to run out with my hands on my ears. It's just that it turns me off.
You're not well.
And think about this, because you both probably travel with your work to other cities and other places. I find that one reason why I've been really happy to work on this project in Dublin, and I think that the project, not just this installation, but the kind of bigger framework of talking about sound in the city, has actually made a lot of wonderful connections in the council. People have been really behind it and interested in it, so I'm really grateful to a lot of people who've been involved. But I think the reason for this is that this city, it's not, if you look at noise maps in terms of noise pollution, it's not that it's loud like London or something like that, but at the same time, there's a certain, like, you walk into shops and pubs and things like that, and things are always a bit too loud. You're always, and it's a little bit of the psychology of the place, you know, you're kind of hiding yourself away in these kind of dense environments, but over time, I crave quieter, like I go to Berlin and I hang out with people in smaller situations and I have nice conversations over time, that I don't have them around here as much, because there's kind of culture of a lot of background music that people don't always want. So these are conversations that emerge through talking about this, and that seems to resonate with other people, not just people who are working in the council, but people who I've been talking to, you know, everybody, really. So I don't know what changes at this point. I'm not trying to change everything. I'm trying to start trying to get people to question
things.
To think about, to talk about it. To acknowledge that they have a voice in it. And that it is part of architecture. It's part of, it should be part of the way you plan a series of spaces that comprise a city. Because if you don't pay attention to what the experience of the place is going to be, if you only think about architecture and urban planning as, oh, these roads go there, this is what it should look like, we should protect this building because it's from this period. Those are very important things. But the experience of being in the space often escapes those conversations. And we've all seen a lot of places evolve in Dublin over the years where there isn't a lot of attention paid to what the experience or the atmosphere of the place is. And I think that this is one of the things that Dublin really has going for it, is these kind of interesting atmospheres that it's hard to put your finger on what makes it so interesting. But I think it has to do with sound. I think it has to do with aspects of the visual environment which are rarely addressed, surfaces, materials. It has to do with like which people are in the space, kind of the sociology of it. And that through working with sound, you start getting people to be able to engage with those other less definable characteristics of space.
So just to get back to what people can do, like they can go into Media Square.
Yes.
With their phone.
Yes.
They can go on continuousdrift.com.
Yes,
and then they can select the sound they want to hear.
The first thing you would see when you go onto that website is you'll see an enter button. You click the enter button. Then it asks you if you're in the square. So you have to tell...
Yes, I am. Even if you're at home.
Pretend you're in the square. No, be in the square or be where it's where you actually are. Be true to the computer.
Okay.
And when you... then you enter into the system, and it's a very simple interface where you can read about the project. You can look at the schedule when it's on, which is important because some days it's off. It shares the space with other works, other events and things like that. So you can look on there and see when it's on the next 10 days, what times of the day. And then you can just browse the work by artist, by image, by work title, and select which one you want. Hit play. It'll start to play in the space.
Listen on your phone somewhere else. You have to be in the space.
Yes. Okay. It's a located work that way. Exactly.
That is all we have time for, but it's been fascinating, hasn't
it? Absolutely.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I really enjoy talking to you guys.
And we do hope that everyone's going to get down to Meeting House Square.
Absolutely.
With their phones.
Yeah.
And listen in. And we will be back with another fascinating sound on The Art of Living at the same time next week.